Everyone's so quiet. Good evening, and welcome to the September 8th, 2008 meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. To lead us in the pledge tonight, we have our business owner for the evening, and that's Jamie Parker of the Otter Rock. It's up to you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. And now tell us all about your business, please.
Good evening, Mayor, council members, and city staff. I've had the Otter Rock Cafe for the last 7 years, and it's been going strong ever since, and when Joanne had it. And I just wanted to keep it going. It's a local favorite, and I do employ about 22 local employees. All my staff is from Morro Bay. I have two from Los Osos. And if you want to count my musicians, I probably employ 50 local musicians on the Central Coast. I just want to say that I do have a wonderful staff, and we're like family, and we treat all the customers and locals like family. And we've have an excellent breakfast, lunch, and dinner, live music every night. I would say our karaoke every Tuesday, Wednesday night is a favorite. We have families bring their kids, and they sing. It's very cute. The older crowd kind of comes in a little late, and I do serve it till 1 p.m., which is a little later than most places, because our Eggs Benedict and our huevos rancheros and our French toast is wonderful. We've had a local following through the wintertime that keeps me alive, and I hope to stay there as long as I can and make everybody happy while we're here.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Okay, announcements. Just a couple of things. Got a lovely letter from the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club, and they've donated $200 to the Morro Bay Community Service Volunteers because they support their work and the work that they have done for them. Thought that was just very nice. That was from Robert Davis as a representative for the club. Mayor's meeting. We had our mayor's meeting on Friday, and it was kind of interesting. We got usually a representative from Sam Blakesley's office will attend also, and he was unable to this time, but conveyed Sam's embarrassment over what's going on in Sacramento. And our representative from the League of California Cities said he should be embarrassed. Apparently, the budget talks are just a joke to everyone concerned. The way it was explained is that the Republican side want no taxes and to borrow again. The Democrats don't want to borrow and want to add taxes. The governor is in the middle and has no support from anyone. It's absurd. It really is embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the state. It's embarrassing for all of us, and it's hurting us, too. If they reach a certain date, then the bills that have been passed during this year aren't going to go into effect for a full year. So it's really very serious. The only thing I can think any of us can do is call or email your representatives and tell them to just get on the stick and pass the budget, because it's ridiculous. The governor's been trying to bring them together for something and has not been successful. So it's a very frustrating and potentially damaging situation for our state. Good news that we got at that meeting is that while American Airlines is pretty much out of the picture with our airport, Horizon may be moving in. They are looking at a potential base here. I think their hub is in Denver, and they would offer direct flights to Sacramento, which would be delightful for this area. So there's a little bit of good news on the horizon there. In the sewer department, but others as well. And it's come back now, and it's we're having to face the music. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for myself, too. I got to pay them as well, and I'm really, it's unfortunate, but it's something that we have to do. We just don't have any choice in the matter, and we have to be able to pay for those improvements. It's not just the new sewer treatment plant, but the maintenance on our sewer lines that has been deferred for too long. Other than that, I think that's it. We're going to have an update on the nitrate study later, but I'll get the other city council comments first. Betty?
We had a Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting this past week, and we all received a DVD on what Orange County is doing in terms of going to recycled water completely, where what comes out of the waste then gets cleaned well enough that can go back into your tap. So I have that tape if anyone's interested. I'll maybe give it to the library unless staff wants it. The other thing that was made mention of at the RAC meeting was the county has done a very good job about dealing with this mussel issue in the freshwater lakes, which are actually sources of water for other communities in the town, but that Nacimiento, because it's under Monterey County's control, has not done as good of a job. And so we're trying to do some negotiating with them to get them more on the stick with that. And the last thing was that we did have a 10-year homeless meeting a couple of weeks ago and agreed to continue on for, I would say, another year, Ms. Luker, and that our next meeting won't be till October, but at some time before the end of the year, we will have another presentation, I would guess, from the county in terms of the city's participation.
Bill?
Well, I just want to take this moment to give my thanks to the members of our Police Officers and Firefighters Associations. They, both groups, have endorsed my reelection for council, and I know it was a big thing for the firefighters because they don't normally do it, and the police officers don't do it frequently. So I just want to say thanks to them, and their confidence in me is appreciated.
Okay. Melody.
Yes, the mayor talked about your increase in sewer rates. And actually, the city of Morro Bay is now the largest utility bill I have. It's finally exceeded my phone and internet combined. In that same envelope, when you were told that you were going to pay more, you were also told that we've got a problem in Morro Bay, so you got this little flyer. This side, and I've been told that we will fill up all the tanks and we will store water, but with that in mind, I would suggest that you stop hosing down your driveway today and that you consider taking shorter showers last week. We put all these things on the back, or the staff did, for in the bathroom, in the kitchen, in the laundry room. We've put little signs around town. I would just suggest to you that I've been talking about this for 2 years, and now it's really serious. And staff will explain to you why it's serious and why we have to conserve water. In that same vein, so that's in your water bill. Be sure you don't miss it. I know I've talked to a lot of Morro Bay residents, so I said, did you get your water bill? And they said, my God, my rate. No. You have to look at the blue thing, too, just to get the irony of the whole thing. Then on Wednesday, I think it was, I went to a great event right here on rainwater harvesting. It was well attended. I was very impressed. The place was full of people. And it was sponsored by Slow Green Build, the National Estuary Program, the Surfrider Foundation, and the Sierra Club. And they're playing it now on AGP, and it goes far beyond the rain barrels that I've always been espousing that I have at my house. It goes into other things that you can do to do low-impact development and to do rain catchment right there in your very own yard rather than letting it all go down the drain, especially now that we actually need all that water. But anyway, it's playing on AGP, and if you can get through kind of the reggae music, you can get to the information part. It was a lot of great information.
Okay. And closed session report, Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to council meeting, council met in closed session regarding real property negotiations and pending litigation. The real property negotiations were the county city library at 625 Harbor Street, 35W and 36W adjacent to 235 Main Street, and the Morro Bay RV Dunes. As to all these real property negotiations, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act. The litigation discussed was Linker versus City of Morro Bay and Morro Bay versus Martini. As to these litigation matters, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay, and our department reports tonight are police and fire. Should we start with you, John?
Sure. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Officer Tyler Brooks' last day was yesterday, and he went to Santa Maria Police Department. But we are conducting the written and physical agility phase of the testing for new applicants this Sunday at Allen Hancock College Police Academy. So hopefully we'll get some good candidates out of that. Speaking of police, see if they can increase their patrols in those areas that were reported also. The final tally on the Tip-A-Cop dinner that was held last month was over $2,300 for Special Olympics. I think I reported it a little bit under that at the last meeting, but the final tally was over $2,300, which is phenomenal. Let's see, typical activity that we've been having over the past couple weeks. We've had a few DUI arrests, a couple traffic collisions, some disturbance calls, a couple bicycles stolen. We had a couple drunken public arrests. We're seeing an increase in identity thefts related to credit cards and some various other calls. And today, if you got caught in the traffic jam down at Highway 1 and Highway 41 or Atascadero Road, what was happening there is Caltrans was doing some slurry sealing of the on-ramps. And apparently due to the weather, it didn't dry fast enough. So when Morro Bay High School got out, you can imagine the traffic jam that it created down there. So we called CHP back, we called Caltrans back, and we had to help direct traffic for about an hour and a half down there. They say Caltrans told us it may happen again tomorrow, so at least now we have some advance notice from them, which we didn't in the past. And so we'll have some volunteers on standby, and should that happen again, we'll be a little more prepared for tomorrow.
Okay.
And that's it.
Thank you, John. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Good to be here tonight. Things are going smooth at the fire station. We've been awful busy the last week or so, but I want to focus more on some other things that are happening around the city. We were notified by the state parks that they're going to be doing some fuel modification on the backside of Kings Street near Balboa. They're going to start there and cut up and remove some of the dead trees and stuff that's accumulated back there in the state park. We've been really encouraging that for a number of years, so it's kind of nice to see that occurring. So they'll be starting at Balboa and Kings and working up towards Carmel, and there are a couple of small little encampments where people will occasionally stop and set up camp, and so they're going to clean those areas out as well. So if you hear anything, some chainsaws or things in the state park along that border of Black Hill, that's what's going on up there. Fire station, if you've seen that lately, we got the final color code on it. This week they should be putting the red color base on the outside as well and painting the interior, and then the garage doors go up. Community can come out and see what's new in the city as far as the fire department is concerned. Another issue fire-related is the public hearing addressing the consideration of the resolution of intent to contract with CAL FIRE is not at the next council meeting. It's been put off to October 13th. So I want to get that message out that is the 13th, not the 22nd of September. And the chief reason is my son's going off to college, and that's the time I'm taking him up there, and I want to be here for that discussion. So apologize for moving that date. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. And the nitrate report, Bruce,
that you? Madam Mayor, council members, it's really not so much the nitrate report as it is the water report.
Okay.
And just to reiterate what council member DeMarin indicated, the water shutdown will be from the state water shutdown, where they go for annual maintenance, will occur from October 27th till November 16th.
During that time, we fully expect to have alternative sources of water or treatment systems in place. But as a precaution, we have sent out those reminders to the community to notify folks that, you know, please be prepared to conserve water during the shutdown. But our first and foremost track is to secure a water source, and we feel pretty confident, as expected, that we're going to be able to report within the next week or two that we've been able to secure that. We're meeting with the California Men's Colony later this week and two other vendors, both of which have indicated they can supply a temporary treatment system in the time frame that we need it. So we're not expecting or relying upon our emergency procedures. They are in place. We do have a notification procedure in place. We do have pre-notification procedures in place and a standby plan. But again, our first and foremost emphasis will be securing a more reliable water source in the coming week or two.
Okay.
And just as a follow-up, Dylan can jump in here anytime, but we're also doing a workshop tomorrow. We're hosting the workshop to talk about more environmentally benign and sensitive ways to implement farming practices that are less impacting upon our groundwaters, i.e. Ways to avoid dosing up with nitrates as fertilizers and other pesticides and herbicides and environmentally sustainable farming practices. So we're hosting that meeting tomorrow, too, as some of the outreach that we're doing along kind of like the nitrate front. But if you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
Any questions on those issues?
No, I have a comment based on that. Obviously, our concern
began originally contemplated, but if something happens, if one of those six or seven first and foremost alternatives that happen, we'll come right back to you. But I fully expect to be able to resolve this.
So the bottom line is, during that period of time when you turn your faucet on, the water will be safe to drink. However, there are those people that have expressed concerns to me that some people that say nursing mothers and so forth aren't as comfortable. I have talked to the local folks at our local Culligan dealer, Rob Kitzman, and he says during that period of time, if anyone is concerned, and keep in mind the water will be safe, you can contact them and they will loan you a reverse osmosis unit. They will install it for nothing, and the service from October 1st through November 30th will be free. Then you can have them take it out again, or I'm sure they hope that you'll keep it in and maybe start paying them. But for those people who feel they're at risk or are concerned, we've had a commitment from Mr. Kitzman that they'll put it in for nothing and you can use it during the period of the shutdown and it will be free. And also those folks who have their own reverse osmosis units that own them, they say before all of this happens, if you want to, just to make sure everything's working right, you can take a sample of water down to them and they'll analyze it for you to tell you whether or not your unit needs you to change your filters or whatever it is you do to your unit.
Okay, Melody?
Yeah, my comment, Mr. Ambo, you were just saying that we will secure a contract with CMC, or we, in the next couple of weeks, will be getting equipment in to assure a safe water supply.
We're going to meet with them and explore the possibility of securing that as a source. They've indicated, well, they're obviously interested because we're going back to meet with them. So that's going to occur this week. And at the same time, we're meeting with two other providers of alternative treatment systems. So as I indicated in a couple updates earlier, we're not going in series. We're pursuing these on several multiple tracks mm-hmm. in parallel. And the minute we secure one of these, with the preferred choice being water from the California Men's Colony, we'll report back to you. But if in the unlikely reason we're not able to do that, we do have access to treatment systems that they've indicated could be here as early as 72 hours after we place the order. So we're...
Excellent.
Yeah.
I would suggest that you kind of provide an update at the Planning Commission meeting next week, and then our next
podium. And Rachel is going to start from the high school with a high school report for us. And please limit your remarks to 3 minutes and not on anything that's on the public hearing agenda.
Hello, ahead, my name Rachel. Is Rachel Ayotte, and I'm representing more of a high school student body. Just updates. We started off the school year with our football game Friday night against Emmanuel High School, which we won 46-13, so that was really exciting. And the following day, we had our second annual Welcome Back dance, which was a success. And as far as other sports are concerned, girls tennis and golf have matches this week, home matches. And boys and girls cross country has a meet on Saturday. And volleyball is going on too. And if anyone wants to know when the home games are or away games, we have a full schedule of our sports on our webpage, mbhs.slcusd.org. And senior citizens get in free for any home event at our high school. Our advertised testing scores, or API scores, are the highest in the county for the fifth year in a row now. And the only other school that's closest is San Luis Obispo High School, who just reached the 800 mark that we've gone over. And we're looking towards having a rewards trip in February to May to Six Flags or Disneyland, which we've done in the previous years. And this year we have 70 more students than what we expected, six of which are foreign exchange students from Costa Rica, Italy, France. So that's really cool. They're really nice kids. And we have three new teachers, one of which is an auto teacher, another one Spanish, and then English. And we are very excited for this school year, and it should be a good one. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Rachel. Hope to see you often.
Hi, Madam Mayor, council members, city staff, Morro Bay residents. I'm Peter Candela with Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. And I was going to give you some stats about our chamber. First, I'd like to say, make a comment about one of our people who are leaving. That is Bill Stafford. He's been with us for about 10 years, and he is going to retire again. We're going to try to pull him back in after a while, but I think he may be retiring this time. So, Bill, if you're watching, good luck in your retirement. Tomorrow's his last day. Phone calls, 834 total visitors for the month of August. This was 3,441, and actually, if you want to look at it, there's a stat here that it's up by 543,000 from last year. That's really amazing. And we've signed up 141 new members in the last 10 months. So we're really moving. A couple of things that's going on, as you know, we have the Avocado Margarita Festival coming up, a different twist this year, two things. We have the Morro Bay cheerleaders that are going to be selling the guacamole and chips for a fundraiser for them, which is going to be great. We are actually going to have some chefs come in our tasting row, and they will do food demonstrations, which is another added twist too, which I think is very neat. And then we have a small business networking breakfast. That is the 17th, September 17th, and September 16th we have a candidates forum here at 5 to 8. And then without going into all the other stuff, New Year's Eve, we have a great program for you. I cannot wait to tell you who's on the agenda. It's just fantastic. So any questions, please direct them to the chamber, and I'll be there. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Morro Bay City Council. My name is Rosalie Valbo, and I live in Morro Bay. But today I'm representing Morro Coast Audubon Society, which as of last July 17th became the proud owner of 8 additional acres of land to add to the Sweet Springs Nature Preserve in Los Osos, bringing the size of that preserve to 32 acres. We thank the Trust for Public Land, the Wildlife Conservation Board, the State Coastal Conservancy, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service National Coastal Wetland Program, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Section 6 Recovery Land Acquisition Program, and also the Donovan family for their ultimate agreement to sell the property for the permanent benefit of wildlife and the public. We're throwing a party to celebrate, and everybody's invited. It will be Sunday, September 21st, 2 to 5 in the afternoon. We'll have guided tours, birding, face painting, champagne, and a special Sweet Springs cake. Of course, there's plenty of work to be done, We need help, UBON, so that's morrocoastaudubon.org, or leave a message at our chapter phone at 772-1991. I also have several copies of our newsletter, Pacific Flyway, with this information if anyone wants one. Thank you for your time and attention, and I hope to see members of the council and lots of Morro Bayans at our party Sunday, September 21st, 2 to 5 p.m. at Sweet Springs. And may I distribute these to the council?
You can give them to Rob right there. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and everybody at home. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm the friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. I'm here tonight to talk about our brick program for Phase 1. Anyone that wants to get bricks, they have until September 15th for Phase 1. It takes about a month, a little over a month, to do the laser engraving on the bricks. And so if you're interested, I left some handouts in the back, or you can call me at 772-2852. We're doing pretty good on these. I think after the people see these bricks in Phase 1, Phase 2 will probably sell out because it's going to really look neat. There was something else I want to say, but I'm having a senior moment, so we'll have to forget about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
Good evening, folks. Ken Vesterfeld, proud resident of Morro Bay. A couple of items. The first one is the Rotary Club of Morro Bay Foundation, along with the Friends of the Morro Bay Police and Fire Department, are raffling off a 2008 Prius. I know this is not the first time you've heard it, but it's coming down to the wire. It is the first prize, again, is the 2008 Prius, or you can choose to take $18,000 in greenbacks home, which would be quite nice. The tickets are $100 each. Now, the Rotary Club of Morro Bay last year alone presented $10,000 in scholarship to local students that are here, and it is tax deductible. And if you want, you can call the police department or the fire department, 600 Morro Bay Boulevard. And the reason why I'm doing that, for some reason, some mean-spirited people have put out a rumor that the job has been shut down and bankrupt, et cetera, but, which is kind of terrible. But we have counted. There's only been approximately 5 days in the year and a half that nobody has been there other than holidays and weekends. We start a little bit of insulation today, so the insulation finally will be done in 2 weeks, then drywall, and then the stucco starts with its application here beginning in 2 weeks, and we hope to have it finished by the end of this year. So appreciate it. Have a good meeting, and don't forget to get your tickets. You can call me or anybody at the Rotary Club will be glad to help you. Mr. Bill Black. A little bit of a thing there for him. I think he has sold approximately 140 tickets. I may be off, but just an amazing person who likes to help out this community. And he's also a major volunteer. I think Bill so far has had almost 600 hours alone at the working around the police department and being a volunteer. So he's recovering from surgery and couldn't be here tonight. So we wish him the best. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Rick Gilligan, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm also the treasurer of the recently formed Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation. Our goal is to build a community aquatic center here in Morro Bay with both a competition-sized and a warm therapy pool for public use to replace the one we lost almost 10 years ago when the pool at Morro Bay High was closed. Our next meeting, and I'd like to invite everyone to attend it, is this Wednesday. That's the 10th. If you're watching this tape delayed, it may have already happened, but you can always go to our website. It'll be in room 704 at the Morro Bay High School. At the meeting, you'll be able to learn about our progress and how you can help. Please visit our website at morrobaypool.org or call 528-1190. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council, Mayor Peters, Linda Merrill, Morro Bay. I'd like to say that I am in favor of C1 and that if you all could please pass that. Also, I'm especially interested in our financial stability. Please do continue. I think that all of you have done a splendid job in keeping this city together, and I hope that you will continue your efforts to be careful with our money. We all need the city to succeed, and as we know, the state seems to be constantly scaring us and harassing us, and there are other impacts. The fishing has deteriorated. So we know that our budget will be lessened, and we just need to have people who understand these financial times and are willing to help us do that. So I really do thank you all. Also on D1, I think that streaming would be advantageous for those of who maybe do not have television, and that could help us, you know, watch the meetings. And I don't know if this is possible, but with the promotions committee that you're having your joint meeting with, I'm really interested in that. Is it possible to do that in the evening, or would that be just one more evening meeting that you would all not be able to, would have to attend? But the morning meetings, I don't know, for some reason I just miss them. And so I wonder if you could consider an evening meeting for that meeting. And thank you all for all of your efforts. Have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. I had an issue I wanted to bring up tonight and talk to you about. Oh, Patty Dutton, and I'm glad to be a Morro Bay resident again. Can't stay away. I have worked in the field of cultural resource protection for the last 10 years, and so I was kind of shocked when I got a call from a personal resident next to a vacant lot that's been vacant. It was the same lot that I actually responded to a couple years ago for the same thing that was going on. It was a lot that does contain Native American burials, known Native American burials. The city does know about them. So I was shocked when they were out there grading and grubbing, because the California Resource Code says that once you do have known Native American burials, that they are not to be subject to any further subsurface disturbance. So I did met with the, actually, let me see here. It was 17.48.310 of the Morro Bay Zoning Ordinances under D. And it says activities other than development which could damage or destroy archaeological resources, including but not limited to off-road vehicle activity and unauthorized collecting of artifacts, shall be prohibited unless specifically permitted by the Planning Commission, which previously adequately protecting any archaeological resources. So I'm wondering if this was done, if the Planning Commission was notified concerning this, and if they weren't, I would hope that maybe this could, in the future, that this could happen. And I also went further along and looked up some other things to maybe help undeveloped areas in the city that do contain historical and archaeological resources be protected in the future. And this is actually in the general plan. And in the general plan under cultural resources, goal number 37, identification, preservation, interpretation of natural and historical resources. Policy OSC-3, and under that it says, it just says different ways the city can explore and take available measures, including purchases, tax reliefs, to encourage...
I need to ask you to wrap it up. But
yeah,
what I would suggest, why don't you put those in a little email to us so that
okay.
we know which
it just
statute
encourages
you're referring to.
To okay. the city to have these areas become undeveloped. I know we need a lot of parking, maybe parking
okay.
lots.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing, I'm a Morro Bay citizen, and I'd like to address item, I too forgot my glasses, D1, consideration of channel streaming, etc., of our government channel. As you may or may not know, a number of our citizens in the past year and a half have abandoned Charter Communications for reasons that we don't need to discuss, and have advanced to satellite dish. But the unfortunate sideline to that is that they no longer are able to watch our government channel and thus are no longer to be as informed as they may want to be. So I would please encourage you to pursue streaming our Channel 20, our government meetings on the computer so that we can continue to keep our citizens informed. It's very, very important. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, friends, and friends at home, Joey Ricano with the California Ocean Outfall Group, dedicated to ending waivers of the Clean Water Act like the one we're busy getting rid of here. I'd like to show you the incredible news about the precedents that were set Friday, September 5th, at the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. I'd like to, but unfortunately, there was a complete press blackout, and missing in action and AWOL were the Bay News, the Tribune, and there was no funding for local TV coverage. The precedents that were set were two. First one was the California Men's Colony, a chronic polluter, was the first entity prosecuted, enforced under the Marine Life Protection Act. It was the first marine protected area violation in history to be enforced and prosecuted. They paid a $40,000 administrative civil liability, and what it means is that Governor Schwarzenegger cares about his ocean legacy, and he means business. The other precedent that was set was the same chronic polluter, the California Men's Colony Prison, for having too much chlorine in their discharge. There were numerous violations, and perhaps even worse than the violations was the fact that they never informed anybody. So that means if you were using the water, you may have been taking a chlorine bath. Now, here's what's so important about that latter one, is that for the first time ever, a regulatory agency has said that chlorine poses special dangers in the aquatic environment. And what they did was they rejected a settlement offer brokered by the staff and the CMC, and they unanimously instructed them to go back and come up with a higher dollar amount. So this is something that's very good news for the environment, and it sends a strong message to polluters. In conclusion, I'd like to mention the ill-advised attempt by Harbor Department to put a marina and dredge back near the State Marine Reserve. There are many reasons why this is a bad idea, but not the least of them is this idea of violating a State Marine Reserve by dredging. They want to violate the Coastal Act by putting up a seawall and armoring the coast. And finally, they want to dump their mud on Sandy Ocean Bottom, which will require an Environmental Protection Agency waiver. So I hope that when this comes before you, you will say no to violations of the marine protected area, and I thank you for this opportunity to address you today.
Thank you.
Good evening, Noah Smuckler, Morro Bay, and I'm here to talk a little bit more about water, specifically to talk about some of the things that we've experienced in the last week and some opportunities coming up. We all know that we have some real challenges with our water supply in the next couple of months and probably into the ongoing future, and so I like to quote and discuss the idea of an emergency is an emerge and see opportunity for us to come out and take a look at the opportunities for solutions. And that's what we've been doing with Surfrider, Slow Greenville, and Sierra Club, and now the National Estuary Program, to promote the opportunities that residents, businesses, and the city have to take steps towards self-sufficiency with our water supply and to do things that require less energy and inputs on the far end. So I really wanted to say thank you to all the participants at our rainwater catchment events last week. It was well attended, as was noted by the council members, and I really appreciate the staff that participated with the presentations during the week and also in the evenings. I apologize for those of you who do not like reggae music, but really we like to keep these things upbeat because solutions are upbeat. They're an opportunity for all of us to realize the savings potential that we have. So with that, I really look forward to a further implementation of these programs, more example projects through the city, and really with the businesses to be partners with this as well. So another opportunity that I think would be valuable for us to promote, potentially through the water bill or other sources, and I'm sure we will, is the workshop on September 13th. It's called Saving Our Water, One Drop at a Time. That's going to be in Los Osos at the South Bay Community Center from 1 till 4 is when the booths and all the information will be available, and then continuing on into the evening with more discussions, an ice cream social, and then a movie. So we have other plans for future events around the solutions that we know will be impactful and beneficial to our community. And if you would like to find out more about the presentation regarding rainwater catchment, AGP Video is thankfully there, and they will be replaying this, as was noted, and we'll have copies available at the library. On another note, I also do support the streaming on the web of the council meetings and other government meetings. I think it's an important thing to for us to do, especially because we have more and more people going to satellite, as was said. So let's get this out there so the residents have the opportunity to participate, as we know they should.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I forgot one announcement that I was supposed to make because it's down below me. That model that's down there, if AGP can pick up a picture of that, is of the Golden Hind. This is the project that is, they're building a replica of the Golden Hind, and they are raising funds right now to be able to have it permanently docked here in Morro Bay and able to take people out on sails from here. So I was told by Howell Thomas, who is spearheading this whole project over in England, that the actual boat's going to look a little bit different than this. They've done more research, and authentically it does have some differences, but this is going to be a pretty close replica. So we're going to house this over at the Harbor Department, and they are looking for funding to complete this project. And so if you are interested, maybe we can get AGP to put that on during the break, and you can see the address and where to write for funding. It's going to be a great addition to our harbor ultimately. And with that, any responses to comments?
Just one. I forgot to acknowledge that two staff people, as well as myself, attended a shortened version of the rainwater catchment series earlier this week. And it was very effective, and I think it will play nicely into the conservation measures that we're going to need to take over the next few years. I think it's real positive.
Bill?
Regarding the Golden Hind, I think it first came into Morro Bay, if I remember correctly, about 1975, and that's a guess on my part. And that was, I think, probably the first or the first in a long time of replica ships, and Morro Bay residents outdid themselves in all going down there and looking at it and touring it and all of those things. And I had the opportunity to fly over it and take pictures while it was sailing on down the coast after it had left the harbor. And it was I haven't done any of the other replica ships from an airplane, so it was very much of a unique experience for me. And as I say, that was way back in 1975, but it was a lot of fun.
I did have one comment, and that I don't know if Bill Stafford's watching this meeting, but he has been an incredible addition to the Chamber of Commerce for many, many years. He's that cheerful voice that answers the phone. Chamber of Commerce, Bill speaking, and he's just great. He's been a real asset to our community and really helpful with all our visitors. So wish him well in his second retirement and hope maybe he comes out of that too. Anyway, we'll take a short break and we'll start our public hearings. Zoning ordinance amendment for neighborhood compatibility standards, and I'm going to do just a little preview on this one. This is something that started out as a citizens' movement. They were concerned with the bulk and scale in our neighborhoods and the fact that these totally huge houses were being put on very small lots without consideration for the neighbors, and it became a very serious issue in a lot of our citizens' minds. So there have been a lot of community workshops. There have been a lot of planning commission hearings on this. There's been a lot of input from a lot of people. It's been a long process, and some people have complained about the length of the process. And I just want to, every 2 years, we have to take an ethics course from the FPPC, Fair Political Practices. And I copied this out of that course because I thought it was very appropriate to this and the other discussions that we're going to be having in the next couple of meetings. Having a multi-member decision-making body suggests a different set of values. This includes the value of having a group of individuals with a variety of experiences, backgrounds, and viewpoints come together to develop a consensus. Consensus is developed through debate, deliberation, and give and take. This process can sometimes take a long time, and it's very different in character than the individual decision maker model. And that's what I want us all to remember. When you see us up here at our meetings talking things to death, it seems, to some of you who have made up your minds at home and you know what you want, why is it taking us so long? You have to remember, each one of us up here represents several hundred of your viewpoints. And we need to be able to express those fully. So yeah, it is messy, it does take time, but this is the democratic process, and it works. So be patient, and we are going to really look at this situation. We appreciate the input that we've had from the community on this. It's been very community-driven, and hopefully we're going to get to some conclusions sometime soon. So with that, Mr. Prater?
Great. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening. Good evening, Council. Very good opening. I think you kind of hit what I was going to drive home about the process. Very on point with exactly what the Planning Commission did. The staff held a number of workshops in July of 2007 that really kind of got the city participation started on this. I know the citizens had started previous to that. But we held a number of workshops that kind of really tried to focus in on what the concern was and try to really narrow down and be able to articulate that, so that that gave us some direction to develop some sort of ordinance change would be the outcome of that. And so that's what we did. In December, we held a first public hearing to kind of discuss what that solution might be from staff perspective on what we heard and what we've studied as far as the characteristics in the town. That led to good discussion with the commission, which wanted additional information, particularly about the use of floor area ratios, which led to more public meetings that we had held, and so on and so forth. And so the presentation that I'm going to give you is going to be kind of a brief version of the meetings that we held at the Planning Commission and ultimately convey to you what their recommendation was to you from their board. So with that, what we did is we started out, as we did with the Planning Commission, which is we looked at what the objectives were for the update. We also looked at the characteristics that were out in the real world of Morro Bay, looked at the FAR issues and some of the impressions that other communities had had. And that's the bulk of what this presentation will be about. And ultimately, I'll summarize in the end what your board, the Planning Commission, recommended with a unanimous vote. The first is to look at the general plan and look at the coastal plan and use that as the guiding principle documents and ways to sort of further implement those through an ordinance change. We also wanted the ordinance to be a user-friendly document that could be easily administered and that really addressed the issues that we wanted to address. Primarily, that was retaining the neighborhood identities, establishing the feel of Morro Bay, the preserving the small-town character and its setting. And one of the key principles was to not really get into creating a lot of nonconformities with this change. And I think that was a key that the commission ultimately picked up on. Some of the characteristics, which I'll kind of briefly summarize, is most of the town, as we all think of it, we think that there's these 6,000 square foot lots out there. We all kind of have a notion that the north end of town are smaller lots and a little different characteristic that's out there. But we primarily think that this R1 zone is kind of the pride and joy of the single family neighborhood, and typically it would be a 6,000 square foot lot. Well, when we went out there and actually looked and measured, almost 60% of those lots were less than 6,000. So that's already a kind of a high number in what traditionally we would think is our larger lot community. We don't even have the larger lots there. So when we look at the overlay zones, that's the S1, S2, that is the sort of the north and central part of our community. We know that we have smaller lots there. We looked at that, 1,600 of those lots are less than that 16,000 square foot number. So now that we know that we have a kind of a small lot development out in our community, we also look at what our zoning allows for to sort of compensate for some of that, and that's those overlay zones. When those were developed, they were given a little higher lot coverage threshold, a little smaller setback requirement to sort of compensate for having a smaller lot so that a house could be of equal size to just about anybody else that wanted a place to live in and grow out into. So with those overlays, we had roughly 1,200 to 2,000 square foot of coverage that would be allowed. So we looked at the number of lots that had these limited setbacks, these limited footprints, and roughly it was about 2,400 square foot was kind of the coverage requirement, if you'd say kind of globally throughout the community. We know that we have roughly 4,600 residential lots within the city. We primarily focused on the areas that were outside of the beach track along the west end that had a reduced height limit already, the Cloisters development that already had their own specific design standards. And so we took out all of these lots that were part of that, and that was these 1,400 parcels that would not really be subject to any rules because they already had rules that kind of addressed many of the concerns. So what we were looking at was the bulk of it, which was about 70% of the stock, 3,200 pieces of property. What we did is we went through each one of these lots, and I kind of pulled out a sample set within kind of the north, central, and southern portions of Morro Bay, looked at it by zone district, looked at aerial photography, looked at roof lines, and kind of looked at the data that I had available to me that was recent so that I knew I had all the information available, and I basically laid this out for the commission to look at. And I'm focusing primarily on the smaller lots since that seems to be where there's the most diversity, if you will, of development. And so the upper end of the town, the 2,400 square foot lots, roughly 200 of these lots are a little bit larger than that. As you can see, 766 are within that S1 overlay zone. Again, that's a 50% lot coverage that's allowed, which is about 2,400 square feet of coverage in footprint, and two stories are allowed primarily in that area, although you can get up to multiple three stories on hillside development. So the sample that I looked at looked at a house that was slightly larger than the average lot. It was 2,500 square feet. The house itself was a little over 2,500 square feet as well. It met the lot coverage requirement of 50%. And when you looked at what the resulting FAR number was, that was it equal to 1.
Excuse me, but could you explain that when you say a FAR of 1 for people listening and for council?
Okay, a FAR of 1 is really the amount of area within a structure in relation to the amount of area of lot.
A one-to-one relationship.
So in this case, we're roughly 2,500 square foot as a lot size. They had 2,500 square foot of area in their house. So that's how you got to the 1. Just to give you a reminder of what the S1 overlay district looks like, this is the pretty much the island streets at the very north end of town and primarily on the east side of this development. When we looked at the various lot sizes that are within there, within this tract, there are some nuances within those. Typically, it's a 40 by 60 lot, but there are some that are a little bit different. So there are 40 by 75, 40 by 80, and so on. And then there's sort of lots that are on the end of blocks that maybe have a little bit more property. And so these little nuances kind of have an effect with when using the FAR formula. But what we did is we walked through and looked at the aerial photography, and in this particular case, I have this one highlighted. You can look at that roof line and compare it to the lot itself, look at the pattern of the rest of the roof lines that are out there, and begin to see a pattern in this particular part of town. That's the 40 by 63-foot lot. That's that 2,500-square-foot lot. We looked at the home size, and we looked at the lot coverage, and then we had a resulting FAR number. We walked through all of town doing the sample set of the data that we did have available to demonstrate what the, particularly what the aerials were kind of demonstrating since we didn't go out and do a kind of a foot count or a wind survey count.
And then excuse me again, but one of the reasons this has been in front of you, the Planning Commission, and the public is because of this notion that we're creating boxes that take away view. So wouldn't a FAR of 1 when you were looking at those houses, if it's a 1-to-1 ratio to the lot, to the square footage in the home, isn't that in essence taking the 50% of the lot and putting 50% on top of it and building a box?
Not necessarily, and I'll get into some of the reasons the uses of FAR or some of the impressions of FAR as well. This was looking at, if I go back, that's the aerial that the particular house we were looking at, and then we took a photo of that, and we also looked at photos up and down the street to see what the comparable house was. And I said we did that for a number of these. Then the commission asked that we hold a second meeting and really explore the use of floor area ratios a little bit more and compare those with lot coverage, which is our current method of calculating. And so what we did is we did that. So when we went back, we looked at the differences between the two, and what really came out of that was that neither of those methods really measured the aesthetic quality. They didn't look at whether it was a box design or if it had articulation or not. The tools that really utilize that are either some guidelines or design review as you go through the process. We also looked at kind of how things would develop as we looked at lots in plan, looked at massing as we moved up, and staff also proposed this stepping of upper floors using a portion of either the front or side lines of the building and sort of recessing those to break up some of that mass that was the concern. So we showed some models of that. We showed models of what that would look like as you got to multiple floors, how each floor would have to step back. We also did a brief massing study. We showed what a typical lot would look like. We've got a blackout on that one. Ultimately, we showed what the box would yield under the current zoning standards. And then we looked at what those standards would be if you did this recessed upper floor. The commission wanted to see more of that, so we had a third hearing where we looked primarily just at massing. We walked all through that. We showed what the current standards were for each zone district for various lot sizes. anywhere from the small, medium, to larger lots that we have in Morro Bay. And we showed the relationship between what's allowed under the current standards versus what would be allowed under the recessed upper floor. And then we sort of backed into that analysis and derived what a ratio would be under the FAR formula. And at any sort of look at this, the lowest number we could get with an FAR was 0.85 through these scenarios. So what we found was
okay, 40. I'm going to ask you to explain that one. Okay. Explain what a 0.85, how you get to a 0.85.
That's basically 85% of the lot was being taken up in volume versus the lot size itself. And that's the number of the point system. It's basically a percentage in volume. So if I say a 0.5, that's 50% of the lot volume is in the structure.
And that's under the staff, the current, okay. Because I know that the staff came up with a plan that you brought before the Planning Commission about setbacks. And so we haven't looked at that yet. Your idea on that?
No. What we're demonstrating tonight really is the your commission really did a lot of hard work and rolled up their sleeves and looked at a lot of the data and the information, and made a consensus decision about what their recommendation was. We happen to know that this issue is kind of a contentious question that was being posed by the community as well. And so before we just took their direction of recommendation as kind of the word to move forward with some kind of an ordinance amendment, we wanted to bring this forward to the council to get concurrence that direction that your commission came up with is the direction that we should be pursuing.
And the Planning Commission recommendation is that thresholds be developed to heighten the review process. And I really don't understand the recommendation, but I suppose we're getting at it here.
We'll be getting at that. So we looked at the comparison of sort of using this upper floor setback to just allowing what the current standards allow. The thoughts that came out of that were the nonconformities that were being created if you applied some sort of a ratio factor. What we were looking at if we looked at sort of a neighborhood area and derived what the average FAR yielded, given what's out there in the real world of Morro Bay. And if you use that number as kind of the benchmark to use, 40 to 60% of the development would still not conform to that average. Now, the number that was sort of contemplated through some of the community expressions was a much lesser number. That number was somewhere around 0.75 that came out of the area studies. The number that was sort of being looked at was anything less than a 0.5.
So, excuse me again, but sorry to keep interrupting you, but I read your staff report and couldn't quite understand why we were talking about this 40 to 60% or 70% non-conforming. Because as we drag our feet on this and don't get it done, more and more incompatible structures are being built, and once they're built, they're there. My structure is there, and it's going to stay there. So I thought that what we were working on here was really to prevent things coming in and seriously messing up neighborhoods, not worrying about what would be non-conforming, because basically, as long as I've been on council, everything that's built it's got an automatic variance grandfathered in, whatever. So why are we talking about all these non-conformities?
We can get into that. That's really the heart of this discussion. That's a key part of the analysis, Madam Mayor and Council. We can take it up right now, but I think what we're trying to do is distill about a year and a half long process where we've covered a lot of territory in a bunch of different directions, and we're trying to synthesize this into a set of recommendations that the Planning Commission has given you. Now, I'll roll it up and jump to my conclusion. If you like, we can set this for a hearing and walk you through that entire process that we went through with the Planning Commission. Now the presentations alone will be several hours long because we've gone through a very deliberate analytical process with the Planning Commission on each and every one of these scenarios. And we can walk through each of these neighborhoods and give you a pretty conversant understanding of why we don't want to create nonconformities in principle and in practice. We want to reduce nonconformities, not create them. And that's the direction that we're cautious about proceeding in if we pursue the prevailing FARs, especially those that have been recommended by some members of the community. And I think what Mike's trying to point out is if we're going to have to set that number so high to not create these nonconformities when, again, we're trying to reduce or eliminate them, it would get to a set of regulations that wouldn't even regulate what you're trying to do, because no one would be able to get near them. You'd have to set it so high. So okay. That is why we're just trying to cut to the chase of where the Planning Commission recommended. And as you may recall, we provided about a pound or two of backup material in your read file if you would like to have read through it or called us. We could have gone through that at any time that had the technical analysis.
I'm going to speak for myself at least and say that I believe that most of us on council have watched all those Planning Commission meetings, mm-hmm. and we attended right. all the workshops. Mm-hmm. So I'm just asking about the staff report. But right now, I'd rather just...
Okay, well, let's limit our comments right now to direct questions. And there's something we all have to keep in mind. We may have watched those meetings. The people out in the audience probably were at those meetings. But the people at home, a lot of them, this is going to be the first time they've ever heard of any of this. So let's direct our questions to something that we don't think somebody at home is going to comprehend right now. And that's the thing we have to keep in mind. To some people, this is going to be the first time through. And it is confusing. So let's let the presentation happen. If there's a direct question on something he's saying that's not clear, but otherwise let's wait until it's finished, okay?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. To get back to the thoughts, there are basically nonconformities that would be created with any kind of option of changing the ordinance. But what we also looked at when we got into sort of the third series of public meetings is did a much more exhaustive review of neighborhoods where we looked at hundreds of lots, surveyed hundreds of data, building permits to find out what kind of lot sizes, what kind of building sizes there were, and synthesized that down and did a pretty good review of neighborhoods. And what kind of surprisingly came out was that many of the neighborhoods that we were looking at were already built out under the code, and they were built out to a point that if they were to redevelop, they weren't really going to change much because they'd already kind of had that appearance to the neighborhood. There are some neighborhoods that would have a drastic change. There are some still smaller beach cottages that are in parts of town where there's new 2 and 3 stories development kind of going on. So there is some areas that would have a little bit higher change, but many of the neighborhoods would not. So ultimately, what the Planning Commission concluded was that the FAR methodology didn't yield good design, didn't contribute to neighborhood compatibility, didn't really speak to any attributes itself. It just was a mathematical number that yielded a volume, and really didn't foster any flexibility in its use to get at the solutions that we wanted to get at. So ultimately, the commission recommended to your board that thresholds be looked at that would heighten the level of review to their level through a conditional use permit process, which is a similar approach that we currently have as an interim step. So that gives the commission what we would do if you kind of recommended that this approach move forward is we would work with the commission to develop what those thresholds would be. They may be neighborhood by neighborhood. They may be one global citywide. We would fine-tune that. We would also develop what the expectations were once the project was elevated to their review. What criteria were they going to look at to make sure that the projects were meeting what they expected them to meet, and how they would reduce the bulk and scale and appearance? So those things would be further refined through this process. And that concludes my presentation.
Madam Mayor, if I can, to follow up. So what we're recommending is that is our approach. And if you like, we would begin drafting code and begin that code process through the Planning Commission, which would ultimately come to the City Council. And as I indicated earlier, If you feel more comfortable, we can walk you through the same analysis we went through with the Planning Commission. And I have to tell you, we had some skeptics on the Planning Commission that were heavily influenced by the community. But we got a 5-0, and I think this is a pretty elegant approach because this is a convention that we're already using, and it creates kind of an incentive to do a smaller home because you don't trigger the discretionary review and the heightened review process of use permit, and a disincentive in a way because if you do a larger home, then you do trigger the CUP and go through this and whatever other attributes or accountability may be structured into the amendment process that's forthcoming at the conclusion of your direction with the Planning Commission and what you end up doing. So, again, the recommendation is, absolutely open the public hearing, but then consider that and then tell us if you are comfortable with this and we can begin drafting code and working that through the Planning Commission, or if you feel you would like to know more about how the Planning Commission got to where they're at and get into the nuts and bolts and go through this yourselves, then we'd be happy to do that too. But we'd recommend doing the analysis because the recommendation that was provided in your report really summarizes the recommendation from your Planning Commission. If you would like to get into a more of an interactive review of the whole process, then we will gauge our analysis accordingly and write the report that way.
Okay. Questions for staff?
None.
No?
No.
Anybody else? No. Okay. All right. Let's start the public hearing. And we do have speaker slips. Are there a lot of you going to be speaking? Raise your hands if you want to talk. Okay, then we won't use them. Just please come forward and limit your comments to 3 minutes. And if you like what's being said, of course, do the hand waving. That's always helpful.
Good evening once again, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay citizen. For years, Morro Bay has lacked a vision of how we see our community, how we want to see our community. And that, to me, is the essence of the problem facing you. You're trying to establish planning ordinances, zoning laws, etc., but you have no vision. You have no direction as to which way to go. Over the last year and a half, a number of citizens have come before you with serious complaints because of this lack of a vision, this helter-skelter, oversized homes on undersized lots. We're losing our vegetation without any setbacks, without any backyards. Homes are going up that are just boxes. They bring a lot of money because that's the nature of real estate. Money is in the amount of square footage. But somewhere you gotta draw the line and say, wait a moment. What about the quality of life in the neighborhood in which these big boxes are going up in? What kind of neighborhood is that? And what kind of neighborhood do you create when you eliminate vegetation, you eliminate setbacks, you eliminate backyards? You got parking problems with these big homes. So please, listen to your citizens. I support FAR. It may not be the ideal tool in every situation, but it is a tool, and it's a productive one. 100 communities plus that have used it throughout the state can't all be wrong. Somewhere it works, and somehow it does work. I encourage you to institute ways to make it work. We've waited too long for this. The time is now to start acting, because if you don't, you know, we're throwing away a potential of losing a small town community. And that's what we all moved here for, was the small town quality of our community. And that's what we're losing, unless you want to make changes to these zoning laws that are written so vague that are open to interpretation any which way you want. And that's your problem. So define clearly how you want to see our community to look down the road. That's what we're here for. It's the future. We can't change the past. It's gone. But please do something right for the future. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you. Okay, if I could ask people to kind of line up on the chairs, that way it moves a little faster if you want to speak.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Hi, my name is Bill LaFay. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I actually went to the Planning Commission meeting, and Mike did a great job. I quite didn't understand a lot of it, but this is a thing I don't understand. We've come here since May, and I was involved in those meetings with the community, and I think the general consensus is out of character and out of scale. I don't know how to answer that question, and I'm sure you're attempting to do this, but to have, this is where we are right now, trying to develop thresholds. I don't understand what that means. It's still not, it's still very nebulous to me, and I don't know where we're going from here. I'm just really, really confused, and I don't know if the other people in the audience are, but I don't think we've answered any of the questions. I mean, we did go with FAR, and I guess the Planning Commission just threw it back onto the council and stated that we're not going to do anything. We're going to do status quo. And that's where I think we are right now after a year and a half. That's my opinion, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong. But that's what I have to say. I mean, I don't know where we're going right now, and I don't understand this, you know, threshold concept.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Dorothy Cutter. I've been attending every single one of these meetings for over a year and a half. I don't think this is rocket science. I think that this has been presented in an overly complicated manner. It's really pretty simple. Other communities have done this. They had non-conforming properties, and it works. It simply works. Even LA has better standards than we do. You just have to drive around Morro Bay and look at how property values have been devalued, because people have lost their view, their light and air, they're sitting in a canyon. Now, if we can't apply standards that other communities who care about the quality of life of their citizens, we should do something tonight. It keeps going back and forth, and every time it comes back, it gets more complicated. Now look, we already have this 2,500 square feet. People have to come for a public hearing. Now this is on any size lot. Well, 2,500 square feet on a 2,400 square foot lot is ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, do something simple. I'm sure that the planning staff can give you some numbers tonight and say, on a 2,500 square foot lot, this would be a reasonable size. On 3,000 square feet, this would be a reasonable size. Start somewhere. Start tonight. Don't keep back and forth, because it's never going to happen. This is a good time. There's a lull in building, and this is a good time to face up. You may not be able to come up with the perfect, but you've got to start somewhere. And I think you did 2,500 square feet. Let's lower the amount for the smaller lots. Pick a number. I'm sure the planning staff can come up with something tonight and do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Amity Perry, Morro Bay. I am here tonight on behalf of the 100-plus people who attended many workshops and Planning Commission meetings about mansionization and FAR. Many are home tonight watching and very discouraged because nothing seems to get done. I remind the Council that all workshop members were given red dots to place on areas of concern, and the majority selected bulk and scale. We hear that FAR standards are okay for large lots, but not average to small lots, where specific setbacks are more practical. Staff is concerned about making the majority of homes non-conforming. Many homes are already non-conforming. 2-foot setbacks, garages near the street, homes that encroach on neighbors' lot lines, etc. But when they are remodeled, they need to come up to better standards. For example, I recently remodeled and one of my side setbacks was 3 feet and the other was 7 feet. I had to adjust to the 3-foot side to 5 feet by jetting my house in. Non-conforming means there are better standards now than when the houses were originally built years ago. Again, I ask you on behalf of the majority of people who attended the mansionization FAR workshops, do something about big boxes. Adopt FAR, the wedding cake approach. Over 100-plus cities in California use it. It does work. I agree, 2,500 square foot on a small lot is ridiculous. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, tell you what, if I could see who's, if you could line up in those chairs over there, then I know who's going to speak, and we don't have this long pause in between. So that would be really helpful. You don't want to do that, I can tell. Okay.
Good evening, Council. Jim Nance, Morro Bay. I support what these folks have said, and one thing that I'm concerned about, too, is as we build these houses that people seem to collect from other areas, and they have these houses that they house their money in, and I don't know if you know, about two-thirds of Morro Bay homes are vacation and investment property. In the meantime, our kids, like my son, is down living in L.A. because he can't afford to live here. And our kids are having to move away. And I think that this group that is getting together on these standards is a good beginning. We've got to get our community back for the people that live here and our children. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council. I'm Sue Perry. Before I talk about what I wrote down, I wanted to mention that FAR does have elements that reward good design and with more square footage for setbacks, architectural interests, and solar. I have heard about them at the presentations, and I think the city planning staff should have heard about those. What the staff seems to be saying is we're already so full of bulk and scale that we therefore can't create future standards. We have to start somewhere. Staff has expressed concern about using FAR standards to control house size, saying it would make a lot of the present homes nonconforming, but they're already nonconforming. Just like development standards are always increasing in medicine or in education or licensed professionals, there's always new standards coming along. Old standards are grandfathered in for current employees or for current housing. But when old houses are remodeled or garages added or torn down, they need to meet new codes, new standards. And so, fine, you have some that are nonconforming. But if we don't change things, what does it mean? We're just going to keep building the way we have to let it go downhill. With FAR, we can gradually, over time, improve the looks, value, and livability of our neighborhoods. Staff has also previously argued that because one or two big boxes are permitted on a street, then all future development on that street or in that block could be allowed to conform to the big box standard. Now, that's a terrible interpretation of the words neighborhood compatibility. That's going the wrong direction. They say that it might work on larger lots, but not on small or average size lots. Well, let's look at a typical 5,000 square foot lot, which is average, I guess. Last year, a permit was easily obtained for a house and garage total of 3,396, almost 3,400 square feet on a 5,000 square foot lot. That's a FAR ratio of 0.68, which the staff would think is great because they say some of them are up to 95% and we can maybe squeak up to 0.85. But that ended up just being a big box. It's a box. I'm sorry, it's just too big. We need houses to fit the proportion of the size of the lot. I hope you will direct the staff to proceed with such standards. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Chris Sedaris. Your Honor, council members. What I see is a lot of frustration because there is probably not going to be a simple answer. I'm new in town. I think it's a beautiful place, and I think if you can preserve the beauty through architectural limits and designs as opposed to volume, the FAR does sound like a good idea in certain respects and in certain areas, but basically you've got a 3-gallon lot and you're probably trying to put 3 gallons of house on it. So it's a volume issue. Most houses that use up their whole volume are architecturally very bland and dull. So I think it really does come down to like Palos Verdes, where you know, the citizens or the come up with some sort of a code of beautifying the architecture. That's my opinion. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Berta Parrish, a concerned and proud resident of Morro Bay. I, too, have to confess some confusion about the thresholds. It seems rather vague to me, and I have confidence in the Planning Commission, and I hope if you approve this tonight that the Planning Commission will come up with a more definitive, what are those thresholds? What are the values of those thresholds? I see Morro Bay right now in a real value struggle, a value between a segment of our community who's trying to preserve the quality of life, and I know that is vague to what is quality of life. If we could agree on the quality of life, that would be a group who is in favor of the vegetation, the small town atmosphere, the small community of friends supporting one another. And then there seems to be the other tension. I don't want to call them exactly opposites, but there seems to be the tension of profit making, where our town, our investments, our home sites are purely money, whether we sell them now or we sell them later. I think the investments goes, I think our values decide, help us decide where our investments are. Do we invest in the environment, in the bird life, the things that we love, or do we invest for profit? I'm not going to resolve that issue, but I see that tension going on in this argument that we're having, this debate that we're having about living, about our housing standards. I hope in the thresholds, I think the thing about that I like best for me is the wedding cake approach, the second story setbacks, that at least provides light, that at least provides some, it doesn't have that box, but the box robs the light of the surrounding properties and seems to infringe upon the rights of the neighbors. So whatever you do, however you come up with some very definitive, I hope, thresholds, I hope it includes the second story setbacks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Noah Smuckler, Morro Bay. And I actually appreciate the conversation that we have tonight. I sat through the Planning Commission's last meeting, and I felt like they did their best to address this issue. It's a complex one. And I do agree with many of the speakers tonight in that we need to take small steps in the process towards the final solution. If we're afraid to do to take any action because of the potential for nonconformity or future impacts, we're never going to have the opportunity to identify the best solutions, and it's important for us to move in that direction in a continuous way. And I think the potential for looking at the lot sizes and making sure that we're promoting proportionate buildings to the lot sizes is a great place to start. I also think it's important for us to realize the property rights of not only the landowner but the neighborhood itself, and the opportunity for us to get past this point where we have, as people have said, a lack of communication of our vision and what we'd like to see. And that's causing, I think that's an effective way to do this. That's a long-term process. So in the short term, let's look at the proportions. Other opportunities that I see, especially with a bit of a downturn with development, is for us to develop incentives that promote our vision. And those can be included through the impact fees that we've recently raised that really help us step in the direction of structures that do not impact the neighbors and do not impact the city infrastructure and the environment. So let's make sure we give the Planning Commission and staff things that help us promote our future vision and reduce the potential impacts of buildings on the environment, on neighborhoods, and ultimately on the future citizens. So let's make sure we take steps in the right direction tonight and not be afraid to experiment in cautious ways, because that's how we'll make future and realize future opportunities for betterment of our codes.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Linda Merrill again. It seems to me like it's pretty clear that the Planning Commission, and I was at many of the hearings, I've listened to it on television and watched the process, and it says the Planning Commission recommends to the City Council, you all, that thresholds be developed to heighten the review process and elevate projects to the Planning Commission review level. So our staff is asking you all to give them direction to go ahead with something that will be clear, that people will be able to respond to. I mean, tonight is not the final decision about what is going to be done. And so I would like to ask that you all begin, give our staff direction to begin work on developing thresholds and expressing what expectations are desired. That seems very simple to me, very clear to me, and I hope that we can do that tonight and that anyone at home who is interested in talking to our planning staff or to you all as council members, that they do so and get a clear vision of what the staff is trying to do here. So anyway, I support this. I think it's well done. I've listened to everything that's been said a bajillion times, and I think that now's a good time.
60% of the community's residence is illegal. I'm using that word cautiously, but it's what in fact, that's what legal nonconforming means. It means it was legal when you built it, but it's not legal now. That's what it means. And so staff's concern is that we don't want to turn our existing community, the people that live here, let's not turn their homes into illegal homes, because that's what, you know, FAR represents if it's taken to the numbers. I frankly have heard a lot of people up here say they really don't understand all this, and they want a little of that. And the fact of the matter is FAR does not address that. FAR just means build real small, and that's going to render a lot of homes out of conformity and illegal, okay? What the Planning Commission did is they're asking you for the opportunity to set standards. That's what they're saying. Once somebody gets above a certain threshold of the existing standard, whatever it is, then let's get it in there, let's review it, and let's figure out those things that we want. Do we want the wedding cake effect here? Do we want it there? The Planning Commission will have the opportunity to do that on a case-by-case basis without rendering all the existing homes in the community to be illegal homes. Okay? It's really that simple. Now, I'm somebody that stands up for property rights, and I got to tell you, you know, this is not my ideal thing. You know what my ideal thing would be, you know? But the fact of the matter is your Planning Commission did a really good job on this one, and they came to a 5-0 vote after a lot of study, and I think you should respect that process and respect the community by not turning half or more of the homes into illegal homes. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, thank you. We'll bring it back to the council. Who'd like to start?
I'd love to start.
Okay.
I want to make a correction to begin with. The meeting, the last meeting that the Planning Commission had was a four-member commission meeting. It was not five. And the reason, my understanding is, by watching it and seeing what was going on, it's not a 4-0 recommendation to us because that's what they wanted to give us, but because it kept being 2-2, 2-2, 2-2. Two members wanted to go with FAR and some kind of menu to go with that, and two members did not want to go with FAR. And so they had to finally come down to this language, which I agree is pretty nebulous, and use terms like threshold rather than FAR because it wasn't acceptable to the other two members. So I don't think that this recommendation is what the majority of the Planning Commission would have brought us if it had been a five-member commission. So I just like to throw my interpretation out there for that. I too would like 3-foot, 10-foot for the, you know, whatever, front and back, and then that gives you a FAR of one. Whatever's left over, say you start with a 3,000 square foot lot, you take out your setbacks, you've got 2,500 square feet left, maybe less, maybe it's 2,000, and you can have that 2,000. But if you stay strictly FAR, you could have that 2,000 one story, or you can go two-story and get a box. But you'll have your setbacks, so at least it creates some kind of view corridor for your neighbors. It doesn't allow for the architectural articulation that we'd like to talk about. So you can do that with a combination. LA didn't do it with a combination. They did it with strictly the one. Now, the second one there is something similar to what Burbank does. They do a three-tiered, and they have a different ratio for each of the lot sizes. And they throw in, once you hit that ratio, then they throw in this list of menus that I think Mrs. Perry was referring to back there, that you can go with that list. And you require one, two, three, whatever it is. And then the last option, and I'm, again, these are just generalizations, is something like Santa Cruz does, which is very detailed, very, to me, overbearing. It goes neighborhood by neighborhood, like Mr. Prater was talking about. And that's just, I don't find that pleasant. I would rather go with something a little bit more simplistic that most people could understand, that this is my, I have 5,000 square feet, I fit in this category, and this is what I have to do. And it becomes very clear-cut. There's no decision that has to be made at the counter. There's no work to be done at the Planning Commission. What you've got is very clear. People understand their expectancies, and they can do it. If they want to press beyond that, they can always appeal that to the Planning Commission and then ultimately to us. But I would like to see us choose one of these three models to go with tonight and send those back. It's been 19 months since we first talked about this, January 22nd, 2007, and I'm done with it. I'm ready to move on and address other work like our water supply and other things, and I want to see something chosen by us tonight and show some fortitude, and we've got the audience here to tell us to do that, and I think we need to do that.
Okay. Bill?
Well, I'm a little confused. In looking at your suggestions, number two, Burbank standards, that isn't going to be status quo, or as my dad would have said, status quo. And also, we need to be aware of the fact that if we do implement one of these standards, it's not going to make the property more affordable. We're talking about a city that's a beach community with only so much property, and these we could cut the size of the houses in half, and they're not going to get any cheaper down the road because there's only so much of us here. And so I don't think that the property value is not a concern to me. The quality of life is, but I'm a little uncomfortable in looking at the hillsides and all the really different weird lots we have with going with a set of standards. You know, if it's this size lot, you get this size house, period. And I would much rather ask the Planning Commission to come back with a set of thresholds. And what that basically means, depending on what size it is, it triggers this, 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 and this. Same thing that Burbank does. So exactly. Why don't we just call it thresholds and tell our Planning Commission to come up with them?
I don't care what you call it, as long as we do it.
Well, we tell a Planning Commission to come up with thresholds, which is what the staff recommendation is, the Planning Commission's recommendation.
Now, what I hear the staff recommendation being is that we be aware of nonconformity. And that, for me, is not an issue. That's not an issue for the public. What's an issue for the public is bulk size and scale.
What I see here is the recommendation from the Planning Commission that says, let us come up with a set of standards. That's exactly what we're looking
at. But the reason it came to us, because they were afraid to come up with a set of standards.
So now we order.
And staff said, oh, no, don't do that.
Okay.
Let's let one person talk at a time.
Tell our Planning Commission that we are interested in things like the wedding cake effect and some air, and tell them to come up with a set of standards that fit Morro Bay.
And you know what? Betty, we told them that 19 months ago.
Let Bill talk now. Okay.
So my recommendation is to, or my feeling is to go with the staff recommendation. Let the Planning Commission know how we feel and tell them to come up with a set of standards. Rather than our saying, okay, we're going to do the number four here because this is what other people do. I think they're Morro Bay is a unique community. We've all sit out there and said, Morro Bay is a unique community. I don't want to do something cookie cutter because 100 other communities do. I want our Planning Commission to come up with something that we can live with that fits our community.
We're speaking
Betty,
the same language.
Please. Okay. Rick?
Well, it's too bad that we have to legislate consideration and concern for neighbors, but I guess that's a necessity. In this town, we have a house that takes up 90% of a lot, and it puts their neighbors in shadows. I think that's really a shame. they have no yard. They may have little kids or a dog, but no place for them to go. And I think that's all very sad. Neighborhood compatibility is another reason that I don't think FAR is the answer to this problem. I'm inclined at this point. I mean, we have a very diligent, hardworking, knowledgeable planning commission. This is what they do. I have trust in them to go along with staff recommendation to send this back to them for thresholds and expectations, and I have no problem letting them know what my expectations are. But that's where I'll go with this.
Okay, Melanie.
Well, I'm going to express the same kind of frustration that Councilmember Wendholz was talking about. That this has been 19 months. I think we gave clear direction some time ago. This didn't start with bulk size and scale or mansionization. This began with view shed. And just to give you a sense of it, I was in my neighborhood and some people were there who knew some of my neighbors, and they were curious about a house for sale up the hill from me on Downing. Beautiful, brand new house, great views of the ocean, great views of the hillside, the town, everything, the decks and everything. Nice big house. So they said, could you talk to us a little bit about your city code? What's going to happen here? And I said, well, you see your downhill neighbor. That's a 60-year-old house, and those people are 85. So I wouldn't buy this house, because in Morro Bay you have no protection. You have nothing to protect you. So they went on down the street. That house is not going to sell because it is so deadly what could happen to that view when that other house goes the way it probably will. The people who live up the house hill from my house on Downing have told me straight out that when you decide to go to your condo or your assisted living, Melody, we want to buy this house because they have a two-story house with a view, and they don't want anyone else to own that house because there's no protection. There's no protection in this town. So I favor FAR. I think it's the easiest and simplest doing this.
No.
Thank you. Okay, so then we can get rid of that. So what I would like to do with this is what I see is a lot of kind of foot dragging, and I do understand that last planning commission meeting, which I watched, was very controversial, and you didn't have your fifth person there who would have probably gone 3-2 to give us some FAR. I'm disappointed in that recommendation we have. So these are my comments, and this is where I would like to move toward tonight. First of all, I think that FAR enables us to not fuss with details. I don't want to fuss with architectural details. What FAR does is it allows the people at the counter and the builders to look at bulk and scale. Bulk size and scale is what people are most concerned about. So FAR does that. I also don't understand why we're talking about a zone R1 when it's become frighteningly clear to me that you can build an R1 house in an R4 zone anywhere in California. So I want to talk about single family homes, not just R1 zones. I want to do what Mr. Woodson says, and you don't just have one FAR number, and the FAR number of one, by the way, is the box number. Okay, yeah, I hope council understands that. So you have to go for a lower number, but you're not going to have one number fits the entire town of Morro Bay. My lot isn't the size of your lot, isn't the size of somebody up on Tahiti or somebody up on Bradley. They're all different sizes. So you create, which Burbank has done, you know, at a 3,000 square foot lot, you've got a FAR of 6, you've got a small 0.6, you've got a smaller FAR number, the larger the lots get. That makes sense. Other communities do that. I'm not opposed to any kind of implementation of this that kind of pulls in the staff idea, because the staff idea was to create these setbacks of second stories, which is what FAR will automatically do. But, you know, if you say, well, let's do setbacks on your second stories, then that disallows any other way of getting to FAR. I think that one of the public commenters said that if you want to trigger review, then you would lower the number. but I don't quite understand it. But I think adopting FAR would actually result in setbacks, would actually result in more compatibility, and it doesn't necessarily forbid anyone from doing anything because we give higher FARs to smaller lots so that they could build something there. Okay, this isn't weird flexibility for a developer to build what they want. It also assures a better thought process than just building one story on top of another story.
Okay. I watched all of the Planning Commission meetings. First of all, the process, I know it takes time, and that's why I read that thing at the beginning, because good government takes time. It takes time to gel all this together and get it to a point where, okay, now we can make a decision based on all the input that we've had and the discussions that we've had. It did start out to be a view protection thing, and it changed. It changed because we found out when we had one of the biggest workshop in this room, we found out it wasn't really view protection that people were worried about. It was bulk and scale. It was big houses on small lots. That was the most important thing, and I've got the figures here someplace, 42%. 42 votes out of the people that were here. So I've watched with interest and with pride, actually, our Planning Commission go through this. They have dedicated a lot of thought and effort to it. They've come at it from entirely different viewpoints, and that was fascinating to me, to watch how each of them came from their own viewpoint, and yet they worked together on it. And I want to quote some of the things, because this is where I came up with what I feel is the answer, because they've given it to us. I'm not going to say who said what. I'm just going to read some of the quotes. Houses that fit within the FAR regulations, but that impose on the lot lines, could be much more imposing than a house that is built within our current regulations. It doesn't necessarily think FAR is a solution, but believes it could be a combination of the two. Suggesting FAR is an element of direction. Make sure it doesn't keep small lots from being able to develop a reasonable sized home. All the commissioners agreed that articulation must be a part of the ordinance. What else? And then their second meeting, that was the first meeting, their second meeting, as they distilled all this a little bit more, FAR would directly affect secondary units, as FAR would apply to all the structures on the lot. That was an interesting point we have to realize. Give FAR a larger number for smaller lots and provide incentives for specific building features. I don't have to read them all, but what I'm trying to get to is that all of them came down to an idea and a combination of FAR and articulation, because FAR would still allow a box. And if you're looking for bulk and scale, a box is a box, no matter if it's a slightly smaller box. It still doesn't give you the attractiveness that you're looking for in a neighborhood. At least that's what I'm thinking people are trying to get. And the new council didn't change it. It was working. So I think that there is something to be said for FAR. I don't think it's the be-all and end-all. I want to go with what the Planning Commission was coming up with and have staff come up with a combination of the FAR basis plus articulation, because that's where you're going to get the attractiveness of your neighborhood. That's where that's going to come in. It's not just a smaller box. It's make it attractive. And the argument about, oh, your property values are going to be hurt by that, I'm not buying it. I think that your property values come from an attractive neighborhood. And I know when I shop for a house, I'm not going to want that little box between two other boxes, whatever size they are. I'm going to want something that's got interest and air and space and trees. That's what makes your neighborhoods attractive. And that's what we're losing if we allow these huge houses to be built. And it's so ironic to me that people move from big cities to Morro Bay because you think they want what we have to offer, and then they want to put their big city house on our little city lot. And that just doesn't, I don't understand that. But that's, anyway. So what I'd like to see, and what I'd like us to go with tonight as far as our staff direction, is to ask them to come back with some, whether you call them thresholds or combinations of the tools. Bruce used the word toolbox, different tools in the toolbox. I think that we need to use the tool of FAR. I think we need to use the tool of articulation. And we need to make something that's appropriate for us. So
Madam Mayor, is that any different from number two or number three on here? Because that's what a menu means. It means different items that can be lined up to augment the bulkiness of a FAR.
Okay, but you're talking about a combination of the two? Or?
I am. Absolutely. Okay. That's exactly what this says.
Yeah. That's fine.
Okay.
That's
so fine. I think the only question in my mind is, do we want to go with a multi-step, a multi-tiered approach like Santa Cruz, which is like 7 or 8 layers, or do you want to go with something a little bit more that's like a 3-tiered layer?
I think we need to leave that to staff and or the Planning Commission because we are a unique community as far as the different topography. We've got very different areas, and we need to have something that's not, we can't just have a blanket thing. It's got to address the different areas. It's got to address the beach tract. It has to address the banana belt. You know,
I think if you understand the FAR thing, that the percentage goes with the lot size, so it's really more about lot size. That because it's percentage, it's the flexibility that Mr. Grantham was wanting because it goes with lot size. And so to not get too, I mean, if you want to, that's fine. As long as but I think it'll just take longer. My interest is that we get this going so we stop having houses that are going to be nonconforming by the time we get done.
Well, we've got a moratorium in place right now. But
yeah. But it's at a very high level, you know, and that may be something we want to look at reducing.
Madam Mayor,
yeah.
The idea of strictly area ratio works fine till you get a rather significant hillside lot, in which case you have a house on one side that looks like it's 3 stories. The lot's not very big, and if you take all the area, things blown way out of the ballpark. And a lot of that house may not be usable space even. Mm-hmm. But so I think you have to have your menus, but which is exactly what we're talking about. I wasn't calling it FAR. I'm just saying you get the tools out of the toolbox and come back with something. But if you could say tonight, I want to do number 2, they're still going to have to go back and
absolutely
come back with things. So you're not saving a lot of time by saying, I want to do a number 2, because somebody has to work out all your menu stuff. And so I think it's, unless you were to go with something like L.A., one size fits all, you're still going back to the planning department and saying, come up with something that we want to look at. Take it to the Planning Commission, have them work out what they had in mind, come back to us. Don't take 19 months, please, but
how about 2?
Get it back here. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and tell these folks to drop everything and come back with this if they have something more important going on. It might have something to do with nitrates, and I'm not going to do that.
I think that's a different staff.
No, but it's still coming out of some of the same people.
Okay. Rick?
You know, there's certainly not a lot of building going on right now, and I think this is a good time to do it. So I'd like to make a motion, if
we'll
I might
see,
at this time.
Did nobody want to add anything more else after? Give everybody a second shot.
I'll hear his motion.
Okay.
Motion to approve B1.
Absolutely not. It's too general.
Okay, then let me say
there was a motion on the table. We have to have a second before we can debate it.
A second on the motion.
Could you make your motion more specific?
I certainly will.
And I will second it.
Make a motion that the council asks staff and Planning Commission to begin work on developing thresholds and expressing what expectations are required regarding lot size to your that way.
Melanie?
Yeah, I got it. You know, Mr. Grantham, I don't have to suffer this after November, but you do. And the clearer direction we can give to staff about, and really a by when date, the better the staff report will be for you come November or December. And the easier it will be to make a decision at that point. And I think based on your motion, you're not going to get much more out of them than we've gotten so far. So I won't be voting for it.
Okay. All right. Read your motion again, please. Either you or Bridget, whoever has it.
I'll make a motion that the council request staff and the Planning Commission to provide us with building thresholds and expectations regarding lot size versus building size.
Okay. I'm going to ask staff, given that and the conversation that we have had, Is that sufficient direction that you know that we want combinations of FAR and articulation and all of that?
I'm glad that we have an opportunity to clarify that, because that was not what the Planning Commission recommendation was. The Planning Commission recommendation was to set thresholds that triggered additional review and then get into this idea of variability of lot size and then adding some aspect of accountability through the process, which has not been determined yet, but for example, some set of findings or some guidelines that would be reflected in approving these projects that were larger, that place, for example, a higher burden of proof to say that you had appropriate separation, and they would have to make the finding in the affirmative that the structure, in their opinion, was compatible and reflected these canyons of good design. That's kind of a little bit more vague and forthcoming in the code amendment process, and that's obviously not what's presented tonight. So if you're getting into something that gets into the whole question of back to the second or third meeting of the Planning Commission, they gave us that direction to come up with this combination of setbacks and consider FARs. We could do that too, but we're likely to pull the same recommendations off the shelf that kind of pulled the mass towards the center of the site and provide. But that's the same process your Planning Commission went through, and that's where they got to, where they thought this would get to it. So
the answer you're giving me to my question about whether FAR would be included in that motion basically is no.
Well, if you certainly give us direction to put an FAR in there, we'll certainly be happy to put one in there. Whether or not it does anything, I can't guarantee you. You could give us a number that we could at this level, we could pick a number and we'll put one on there, and then we could test it and see what it does to the community, if you like.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Having heard that, I think that if we vote yes on this motion, that we deny the discussion we've just had. Mm-hmm. I also think that we need to give them direction better than this. And I think we need to stop talking about a FAR number. There will be a series of them, a tiered approach, if we're sane. So I would urge everyone to vote no on this motion.
All right, any more discussion before the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, motion fails 3-2 with the three women voting against. All right.
I'll be glad to make a motion.
Go another motion. It's okay.
I would direct that the Planning Commission come back with a multi-tiered approach with a menu based on FAR, similar to that at Santa Cruz. Doesn't have to be identical. It can meet the same criteria as, not criteria, but the needs of our town. But Santa Cruz is pretty diverse. We've all been there. And I think that a similar approach would work here for us. And what we need is, oh, sorry.
This is not a motion.
Okay, sorry. I move that the City Council direct the Planning Commission, with planning staff's help, to come back with a multi-tier FAR and menu similar to Santa Cruz's.
I'll second that if you'll amend it to say Santa Cruz and other cities.
Santa Cruz and other cities, and to come back to us before the end of the year.
Second.
All right, discussion. The only thing I would change is if you would say and or FAR.
And or FAR.
And or FAR.
I think we decided we wanted FAR.
Well, but at the same time, not...
With menus.
Perhaps not in every neighborhood.
So
if it's an and or FAR, then I would support it. Otherwise, I want to give them that option.
Sorry, but do you understand that articulation is created by a FAR?
Not necessarily. Not on a small lot.
That's where the combination comes in, isn't it, though?
That's why I'm saying.
Right. And.
Either or.
So it's
and
the
or.
And. It's not an or. It's an and.
It's and or.
If
the Planning Commission decides that, okay, in this neighborhood we don't feel that FAR is going to work, I want them to have the option to be able to say that.
But you've seen that the Santa Cruz goes down to very, very small lots.
I haven't looked at Santa Cruz in that way.
It's as small as the lots get in North Morro Bay. And so what they say is you have your FAR, and then if you don't want it to be a box FAR, you do the menu approach. But if you don't have your base, if you don't have your FAR, then you've got nothing. You could have another box with articulation, but you've still got this, and I don't mean box, you've got a mass. You've got bulk now, even though it's cute. Mm-hmm. And I think the goal was to get away from bulk, and that's what the FAR will take care of, is the bulk, and then the pretty comes with the menu.
Okay. Could you please read the motion back again?
Mike.
Council member.
It never works.
It doesn't work. Okay. Council member Winholtz moved the city council direct the planning commission and staff to return with a multi-tier FAR and menu similar to Santa Cruz and other cities, and return to council before the end of the year. It was seconded by Councilmember DeMeritt.
Is that time-wise possible?
I can't predict the outcome to the democratic code process, as you can see tonight. We can certainly come back and tell you where we're at. Trying to tell folks that they've got to finish this public process at a certain time is, to a certain extent, speculative.
Yeah. In other words, you're subject to the Planning Commission. I'm asking, can you staff-wise do it?
Can we go back with some standards and try to derive some FAR? We can put some number on it, but as I indicated, we're going to give them a number that is going to solve the problem.
I'm asking if you can do it time-wise.
Within, what do we have, Mike?
4 months.
You probably won't have a second meeting.
Actually, was asking the council, do you want me to make it to the January?
January would be better.
Okay.
If I can add on the upside, I don't think we could look at this any more than we already have. So,
well, I know, but you're being asked to come back with some standards and numbers this time, so I want to make sure that you've got time to do that and get through the Planning Commission process.
To give you an idea, quickly doing research, the 20 cities I came up with real quick all have different definitions of even the word floor ratio. Mm-hmm. So just to determine what you want as floor ratio is a good two-hour discussion.
Madam Mayor, may I amend my amendment to change it from December to January with the second consent?
I'll second that amendment.
Okay.
So does this mean the Planning Commission has to have a product to you? There's a deadline no matter what? Or do we come back to you and say where we're at with you? If they're still in the process, feel they can do some more, or are we saying one way or the other you're done with it and we're moving on?
Why don't we say that we have some sort of a report back to the council by January?
Okay.
But if that is 5 months out.
If they say it's incomplete or whatever because they need more research, then we'll deal with that then. But or the council will at then. Okay. All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. 3-2 with Grantham and Pierce opposed. Okay. And again, thank you all. I know it's been a long discussion. Okay. All right. We're going to take a short break before we do our next item. I guess we'll go in order then. As soon as we're back. There we go. Okay, we're back. All right. We will go down to C1 unfinished business for the discussion of responsible party on utility accounts and water deposit. Susan.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. The item before you tonight is a clarification on a motion that was made back in August. It's just some further discussion about that motion of water, since they won't see or be responsible for paying the bill. Instead of making a change to keeping the account with the property owner, staff is suggesting that council maybe revisit the idea of a deposit by the tenant. New tenants signing up would, you know, pay a deposit, or any tenants whose water is turned off for non-payment would be subject to the deposit at that time. But that's something, again, for council to, you know, discuss. The deposit does provide some cash to offset the tenant's final bill and reduce the amount that could ultimately go to collection. So with that, I'll give it to council.
Okay. Council comments, questions?
I would love again to talk on this one.
Okay.
Our last vote was 5-0. We were very strong that we wanted this to not be on the backs of the renters. And I think my argument for that is, I have two arguments actually. Right now it's on the back of the landlords. If something's not paid, the landlord pays it. All renters have deposits with their landlords. The landlord will take the money away from the renter anyways. So I don't think that this actually secures default accounts. I think it's more secure with landlord, with the homeowner, with the landlord instead, because they're a constant. And my second point is, related to the conservation, is who I often see in my experience of 22 years in this town is it's landowners that use more money, or use more water, therefore more money, watering, than it is tenants. I think tenants tend to be a little bit more conservative. They don't take care of the yard to the extent that a landlord might, or he hires someone to take care of it. And I have to say, as a tenant for 22 years, I've been very cautious about my water usage, whether we're in a drought or not. And just to make the point that the governor has declared the whole state in a drought situation right now, which includes Morro Bay. So I don't think conservation is an issue with renters. I think they're as conscientious as people who own property. And I think that there's a better guarantee that the city will be paid its money if it's through the landlord than through a renter who could be here one day and gone tomorrow.
Bill?
Well, after we adopted this, the next day I kind of did a, oh, wow, I didn't think about the conservation thing. And then after the complaints we've had about even guests staying in motels, that, you know, the 30 or 40 minute shower is not out of the question. And especially if you're not somebody that's connected to a water bill at all, or you ever have to pay it, or you ever see anything with it, you don't think of that. You go, oh, wow, cool, that kind of thing. So I really feeling that as it was standing, what we had done wasn't the most workable thing, because I think when you see the water bill, you see the notes in it, when you're paying that money, you think a lot harder about conservation than if it never crosses your mind. And so I do think we ought to put it back the other way, because there's confusion with the landlords, and I don't think it's going to help the tenants that much.
Rick?
I can see some instances where someone could get their deposits back before their final water bill would arrive, probably in most cases. So I think there should be a little bit of protection there for the landowner, so I would certainly go along with that.
Melody?
I have to kind of chat with Susan a little bit to get this right in my head. Now, there's two things going on here, I think. One is the utility deposit, which we actually last time decided we shouldn't require of everyone. We should just require from people who are new, as you said, or who have been defaulted on their payment in another way. And then the second part of it is, who is that responsible person? So, first of all, I still want to stay with the idea that we only require this deposit from people who have defaulted or who are new. And then the second thing, to get clear with Susan, I just asked you, I've owned a house for, I don't know, 16, 17 years, and so I'm not really sure, and I told you this, how many people get water bills who are renters, because Ms. Winholtz is always telling us that they don't get notices, they don't know what's happening because they don't get their water bill. So isn't it true they don't get water bills? If they rent?
If the tenant is the person who signed up, then the tenant will get the water bill. If the owner has signed up to pay the bill, the owner will get the water bill and we'll get all the notices. So by taking it out of the tenant's name and giving it to the property owner, the tenant's not going to get the...
We're taking that out of the control of property owners and tenants and saying it's always got to be the property owner.
Correct.
So I'd actually like to leave it in the private sector for them to have those private agreements. If I wanted to rent my house to somebody and I wanted to decide that it's going to stay in my name, or I want to decide that they'd pay for the water, I'd like it to stay that way. And I think that's how it is, isn't it?
Yes, that is how it is.
Okay, so that's how I... That's
or
what I would
was.
Suggest we do.
That's how it was.
I think that's the most reasonable way to keep it, is the way it was. Because if you restrict it to property owners, then we've got all these people in town who've got to rework all these leases and deals they've got. But I do not want to put this utility deposit just wholesale on everybody in town.
Well, that was my understanding. When I didn't quite understand, I guess, what we did last time, because I, too, wanted the responsibility to be with whoever's getting the bill. And I didn't understand that we had changed that at all. So I don't think that's a good idea. It's got to be the person that gets the bill that's responsible for the deposit. So if that's the property owner and they have sub-agreements with their tenants, that's fine. Then they get the bill, they pay the deposit. But if the tenant turns on the water by themselves with their own bill, then they pay it. Yes, Rick?
I was just going to ask Melody a question. You talked about only new users and people that have defaulted. Can you be more specific about people that have defaulted? Are you talking about people that have defaulted? I mean, how are you going to know if people have defaulted?
People who haven't paid, the people who have failed to pay their water bill. I'm sorry. Good question. If you haven't paid your water bill, they've had to turn it off or they've had to notice you. Any of those steps that they take with people who haven't paid have caused the city money, well, then those people ought to have to pay a deposit in case they do that same kind of behavior in the future. But on the other hand, a person like perhaps Betty, I don't know if she pays her water bill, but a renter who's paid their water bill on time, or an owner like myself who's paid their water bill on time, I think it's grotesque to go out now and put a $100 deposit on those people who've always paid their water bills.
So basically, it penalizes people who have not behaved properly.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I think I'll try a motion.
Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you, Susan. And next, item D1, consideration of channel streaming and purchase of replacement equipment for a local government channel insertion point. And this one is Janine.
Thank you and good evening. At your June council meeting, you had directed staff to come back in late September to update the council on negotiations with AGP Video in relationship to a new agreement regarding the channel insertion point, the upgrading of that insertion point, an automated camera system, as well as web streaming. Staff met with AGP Video in August to discuss options of scope of work and cost information that would be needed to be submitted to the city in order to come before the council for consideration. And during that meeting, it came to light that there was a channel operations control and community calendar computer that needs replacing directly. There's a memo attached to the staff report from AGP Video that provides a little bit more description of what that control computer does. And this particular piece of equipment that is requested to be replaced was installed in the late 1980s with the original equipment package when Channel 20 came online. So over the years, a lot of Band-Aid repairs and replacements of parts have occurred, and it's now no longer feasible to do that. Currently, there's no backup system, so if this control computer does go down, Channel 20 goes dark until a new computer is installed. Purchased and installed. Staff is recommending the council approve purchasing a new control computer as outlined in the staff report, the memo from AGP Video, and using the public education and government access funds that are specifically designed for just such a purchase. In addition, during that discussion of replacing the control computer, AGP also noticed that the new computer would have the capability to provide live streaming of the channel, should the council to desire to do that before the current agreement is renegotiated where the web streaming option is included. If council wanted to start that streaming before the renegotiated agreement is approved, AGP Video has agreed to do that at no charge. From the point where the new equipment is installed until the new agreement has been executed.
Would you have something that you could click on the computer 24/7 to see it? It wouldn't have to coincide with when it's on channel 20 or anything like that.
Well, basically, what streaming the channel means is instead of turning on your television to channel 20 and whatever programming is currently on, you would be watching. You would turn on your computer. We would set up a link onto the city's website and probably onto the Slow Span website that you click on, and you would be watching channel 20 programming from your computer.
I see. So it wouldn't be on demand. It would be whatever's on channel 20 at
correct.
That time.
Okay. There, part of the options that staff is requesting AGP Video to come back with is what is the cost for this channel streaming versus what is the cost for the higher end on demand, where you actually get to specify, I want this particular council meeting and in some cases this particular agenda item.
Wow.
And did you come up with the difference in figures on that?
We have not received that information yet from AGP Video. Okay. They indicated sometime mid-September, within the next week or so, that they hope to have that information to us.
Other questions?
Just one. How long will it take to install this equipment before it's up and running?
That is a question perhaps for Nancy Castle, who is here. She didn't specify how long it would take, but my understanding is not very long once the equipment is actually purchased in here.
Good evening. Nancy Castle, AGP Video. Our Bob Lloyd is out of town at the Coastal Commission meeting. However, I believe we have another technician. We could probably have it in by the end of the week, but certainly by next week.
Wow.
Because we are very concerned about this poor cannibalized and Rube Goldberg computer we have in the back there. So as soon as we have authorization, we'd like to get it out of there.
Oh, but it's ours.
Right. And the on-demand clear down to the item thing could be pricey, because we're looking at going, we have been fortunate to be able to stream through the state of California's backbone through the Cal EPA building, but we're just now switching over to a commercial streaming concern, and we're figuring out what the prices are, but it could get up, I'll throw it out, $750 per meeting. So that's a little bit pricier than you guys want to be looking at. We hope to bring that down, but certainly streaming the channel would provide a great deal of every meeting that's going on all at the same time.
Oh my God.
May I ask one question, please?
Yes.
Is this true, Ms. Burlingame? We have like $136,000 in the PEG account?
There's about $139,000 at this point.
$139,000. And this would take out $4,500 or something like that?
Correct.
So what's left over, so what you're talking about, Ms. Castle, is that per meeting at $750, is that if we go down to the item, but if we just put on the meeting so people could click on a meeting of now or in the past, that would be cheaper?
That would be cheaper.
And then
potential, yes.
But so would we use this $130,000 to buy the equipment to do that, or is it included in the new computer?
Well, I mixed up, but the computer system we're offering, as we described in the memo, is a standalone unit that will stream the channel.
Mm-hmm.
If to go into the archiving of meetings and all of that, it could probably do some of that, but there would be additional costs, because it's not only the cost of the bandwidth to do the streaming, it's the cost of the storage of the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And we did talk with staff about a proposal for this room, and we're looking, we're we're working on what would be needed for that. What we're thinking about doing is doing a partially installed system where we would have mounts on the walls in a variety of places, so that for the council meetings we have one setup of computers. For Promo and PWAB, it's another setup of computers, because that's been a little bit of a stumbling block of how to design for this room so that it would be flexible enough for all the different types of meetings you hold and also be secure enough for all the different types of events that go on in this building. So we came up with a solution. Actually, the city attorney had a glimmer of an idea that I ran with, and it's going to be real good. So we're hoping to come back with that, as we said, in a couple of weeks. We did have a setback in that Bob was out of town for a couple of days. But
so maybe the point of my question would be then, if we spend this $4,500 on this piece of equipment, right, does it become obsolete when we go to this other system?
No, it is an enhancement.
Okay. Thank you.
Bill?
Madam Mayor, I would think that even if you got to the sophistication and the level of monster mainframe computers that can multitask 100 people working it at the same time, which is what you're talking about when you're getting on demand, because it might be half of the people that would use it would all want to see the same planning commission meeting at about the same time. And so you're talking about a lot of bandwidth and you're talking about a lot of horsepower. I would think even if you got to that level, you'd still want to stream the meetings live. When you look at the fact that, and I'm guessing now because it's been a couple of years since I heard, I'm going to guess that about 45% of the people in this city can't see these meetings because they have something besides Charter Cable. Is that about right, Janine? Do you have any idea?
I do not have the numbers on the Charter subscriptions.
I think they're still a majority, but they're just barely the majority, or unless they pick some up with their telephone stuff. But a whole bunch of people in this town are not able to watch these meetings because they don't have Charter. This would give them the opportunity to go online, go to a site, click on that, and see the meeting as if they had Charter Television. I'm surprised that computer is still running, because I was wandering through this building a few times. Yeah, really. I was wandering through this building when a lot of that equipment was put in, and some of that stuff was kind of like low bid when it came here in the first place, considering who paid for it. And so, you know, kudos to you folks keeping this stuff going without the serious crashes that we could have had. And I'm enthused about this. I'm all in favor of being able to stream these meetings. I mean, the fact that you could be out of town somewhere and still see what's going on. You know, if you had to be in Sacramento at a league thing, you could watch Planning Commission or whatever. And that just makes it great. Then you could tell the rest of the folks in this city that have no idea what we're doing, what we're doing. And so I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Any more comments? Okay.
Somebody shall I make a motion?
Sure.
I move that the City Council approve purchase of replacement equipment outlined in the attached memorandum from AGP Video for a twin computer system for channel operations / community calendar, and we direct staff to authorize AGP Video to begin streaming Channel 20 as described in the staff report and attached memorandum.
Second.
Take it, Bill.
You got there first. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Item D3.
To reflect the intent that members will report to the body as a whole each month. When I came on to City Council, the thing that surprised me was that we're not only responsible here to this community, but that we have outreach to other communities and the county. And I find that to be really enhancing for us, because we can get ideas from other cities and what they're doing, or the county and vice versa. And I appreciate that interaction that keeps us from being ingrown. And so I think it's real important that we share that information. I did go to the websites of the different cities and see what they had to offer, and then I followed that up with talking to the mayor or the council member or someone on staff that said, now this is what I think this means, is that what this means? And they all call it different things, but basically they have a place, and interestingly enough, it is at the end of the meeting. And I think that's because it's for our benefit. It's not really for the public's or staff's benefit, even though they receive the benefit of what we say out loud. But it's to keep this group informed of what each other is doing. Basically, Arroyo Grande, they just call it Council Communications, Tascadero, similar. The one that's a little bit different is San Luis Obispo. I just want to clarify that that means that not each individual discusses for 15 minutes, but that in total, the five of us report within that 15 minutes, so we don't go on and on. And then it does allow for questioning if there's something someone in particular is interested in. And it allows us to do that in public, and so we all get the same information again.
I guess I'm confused because I thought we were doing that. I thought that's what we do at the beginning.
For instance,
my mayor's meeting that I'd reported on tonight.
Okay, and that's like about the first time I've heard you report on the mayor's meeting probably all year. And I know that I try to report on the RAC, but we don't always have items. So I understand that that may or may not be a monthly, but I don't hear APCD once a month. I don't hear about the prison every quarter. I don't hear, and I guess what I want to do is kind of formalize the process so we expect of each other to make some kind of oral report. We've got our 30 committees that we belong to. Half of them meet the first half of the month, half at the end, so we wouldn't have that many reports in any one meeting per se. SLOCOG, certainly SLORTA. There's all kinds of things that we could be hearing about that each of us goes to. Mr. Grantham, when he first got on, I remember he was very consistent in reporting to us about the Economic Vitality Commission.
The point where they're going to try, in order to augment their budget, when I brought it to the staff and the council, they're going to try to charge $10 a head for everybody in Morro Bay, but it's not set in stone yet. But the point being, I think I personally try that, but it's just we go through meetings where there's nothing that any of us would really care about at this point. You know, when we had the possibility of having to replace our trolleys because the Air Resources Board was trying to put a replacement date on all transit vehicles, it started out diesels and then it went to everything, and we almost hit a point where, if you remember, and we sent a letter and the APCD did. So that was something of significance people care about. I brought it up. And I think, rather than having to come up with a book report when nothing happened would be a problem. So I'm just saying we should all be aware of it, and when something comes up, we do it. But I don't know that it, and I think we create that space. And I think we could actually use that's what our announcement's at the beginning for. We just have to remember that's what it's for.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem where it goes on the agenda. This is just what others, and just if I could clarify
let other people talk first. Okay.
But can I just clarify one point that Mr. Pierce made?
Quickly.
And that is, I don't mean that you have to report if there's nothing to report, but you acknowledge the fact that this week there is nothing to report, just to acknowledge that.
Okay, Rick.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with it either way, and I think it probably is better to do it at the beginning. I was saying something about it was the EOC, by the way, and yeah, that's fine. And I said that I would keep doing that until people told me not to, and a lot of them started saying, okay, we know, and I go, okay, I'll drop that. But, there was some significant things that happened. A fire happened at the EOC. It's arson. They had to move. There's a lot of changes, we got new appointments like the audit committee. We're doing an audit, and we're doing all these things. So I don't see a problem where we couldn't take maybe a minute or two during our announcements and remind people at least what boards we serve on, what direction they're going to, and what their focus is at this time. Yeah, that's fine.
Nani?
Well, I think this is a good idea, and I think it's good to formalize it so that whoever's on council and whenever that will have this. I've been remiss in talking about NEP and IWMA, a couple of things. Like, I haven't told you that state parks, what they plan to do. Looking at our agenda, if we said mayor and council members' announcements and reports, and then simply put presentations on the next line, and then that would just memorialize it and would remind us. And I think even if you don't have anything to say except there was a fire or an audit, and I think fire is pretty cool, but I think it's still important that citizens know that we are out there with our fingers in these other boards and representing the city there.
Well, my feeling is that we don't need to change anything. I think we just have to be more conscientious about doing it. And I do frequently mention what happens at mayor's meetings. I mention what happens at slow cog meetings. So I think we all just need to be more aware of it. But basically, what it says on our agenda is almost the same as what some of these others say. We just have to do it.
I really like Mr. Merritt's suggestion about, and I would even just change the word presentations. I don't know that I've ever made a presentation or that any of us make presentations.
That's true.
Can we just change that to reports?
Sure.
And then that really is a little bit more clear on what we're expected to say there.
Perhaps you could start to make a motion.
That'd be a good idea.
I would make the motion that that the line on our agenda read mayor and council members' announcements and reports and delete the word presentations.
I'll second it. Second it with the mic on, too.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay.
And Madam Mayor, just for your consideration or the council's, we consistently make our future agenda items at the end of our meetings, mm-hmm. even though it's listed on the front. I'd like to see that, and this is probably inappropriate, but maybe a future agenda item to bring that back and just move that item to the end naturally.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't get to it. You know, if it comes after public comment in my mind, so it can be wherever. I don't know if that needs to be formally changed or not, does it?
Well, even your last one has to be formally changed because under 1.2.7, it shows the order of business. We can certainly begin that process with all the other amendments that are coming back, and we can bring back also whether you want to change where the future agenda item is.
Mm-hmm. Complications.
Where? I don't even see it. Yeah, well, future agenda items usually does come at the end, so I don't have any problem with that, changing that. All right, you want to make a motion on that one, too? You want to make a motion, Betty?
Oh, is it?
Rather than us go to them, which is our usual habit, if we just have them come to us and have one of our meetings start at 5 o'clock instead of 6 and meet with them for an hour, how does that settle with everybody?
It's fine for me.
Works.
Okay. So then it would just be a matter of issuing the invitation to them. Now, the other question I would have, being as how we're getting awfully close to an election. We got less than 60 days before we're going to have an election. Do we want to have this kind of a meeting with this council, or do we want to wait and let whatever the new council is meet with whoever some of the new appointees might be on promotions?
I would just as soon do it now. I think it was this council generated. It's this promotions committee. They're trying to get into their routine of what they're doing, and I think we can work with them on that. I don't know that this is going to change that much.
Let's take advantage of the experience of this council and have the meeting with them.
Okay.
Good job.
I just want to put it out there.
Good job.
All righty. So then we just issue the invitation to the promotions committee as to which of our meetings. And it's going to mean that our closed session is going to have to bump up to 4 o'clock if we have one that day. So we meet them at 5 and then go into our regular meeting at 6.
Or I'll try to schedule and we don't have anything on for a closed session.
Okay. And I was going to ask the council, do you have any conflicts I'm looking for, in any future council meetings to start at 4 o'clock that you know of? Because we'll put this on the community promotions agenda for September 16th for them to decide what meeting.
All right. Is our September 22nd meeting still kind of heavy, or we moved CAL FIRE out? But
we moved CAL FIRE out, but we still have two pretty big issues. We have Cabrillo and as well as Conference Center.
Okay.
So it's pretty big. So we're thinking maybe in October. And that's a point too. If there is a closed session, then we definitely need to schedule a little break in there between the closed session and the pre-meeting and the meeting. So that's something to look at, too.
And I think we would have the closed at 4 and then the meeting with promotions at 5 because many of them work during the day.
That's true, yeah. That's going to be hard to get us a break. Well, see what you can come up with. If they can meet us at 4:30, and we go from 4:30 to 5:30, that'd be good. If that doesn't work, then we'll work around it and have snacks on the podium. Okay? All right, now we go to our consent agenda. And we have some corrections on the minutes. Do we need to still see them? Any concerns?
So I move, can I move approval of the other two?
Yes, Bridget.
If you don't mind.
And then also, Councilmember Winholtz was going to abstain from August 4th since she was absent.
All right, then we have to divide A1. That's interesting.
Okay. So, Madam Mayor, would you like me to move approval of the minutes for August 4th? Oh, no, I can't. That's the very thing I can't do. Bill?
Madam Mayor, may I ask a question of our city attorney? I know in other board commission things I'm on, even if a member is not present, they can still vote on the minutes. Is that against our policy, or
you can? I would prefer you didn't, unless you actually have reviewed the tape of it, and so it's easier just to abstain from it in this situation and approve each minute separately.
Okay. All right. I'll move. We approve the minutes of August 11th as corrected.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And then I'll move. We approve the minutes of August 4th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
You can't. You're not voting on the 4th, are you?
Okay. All right. And then items A2 and A3, I move approval of both of them.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
We didn't do August 25th.
You didn't do August 25th.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll move approval of August 25th minutes.
Second.
As amended?
As amended, please.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. Betty, you have a closing comment? Quote.
I do, and it's, I can't remember who said it, but, and I'm probably augmenting it because I'm going to say the person, say the word, person rather than man, but the quote goes, all that it takes for ill will to succeed is for good men to do nothing, or good people to do nothing.
Okay, and with that, we are adjourned.
I just want to, I would like a clarification about where we stand with our conservation. We don't need
changing. Things are changing day to day. We're trying to make sure that we send out enough information to keep the public informed, yet not create any undue trauma to the public about what could be happening. So we'll be doing that mailing sometime next week after we find out a little more about our alternate water sources. You're correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So are there any future agenda items? There are not. So we are adjourned. Sorry, AGP.
Now we're really...